good morning.
Morning.
It's good to see you. Glad you're here on this nasty Sunday. But to be here in a beautiful place together. It is. I mean, everyone drove here. So today we're going to start the second installation of our 8, 9, maybe 10-part series on resolving everyday conflict. Started that off last week talking about the anatomy of conflict. We'll touch on that in just a second. If you weren't here, though, take a look at this video with me as we seek to understand why is it exactly that out of all the things we could be doing, we're taking a look at how to do good peacemaking. Let me get the lights.
Hey there.
Hey.
So I'm trying to decide what to do for vacation this year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. What do you think we should do?
Good question. I was thinking this summer it would be a good idea if we went to visit my parents. We haven't seen them in a while.
No, the problem is that's not a break for me. Yeah, your parents are hard work, especially your mom. I want to relax. I want to go to the beach.
I mean, seriously, if we don't go see them, they can't come see us. They can't travel. It'll be another year before the kids see them.
I get 2 weeks off for vacation. That's it.
I'm aware.
I want to use it to relax. That's it. I want to take it easy. Work's been hard this year. I want to go to the beach. What's the problem?
Yeah, but we went to the beach last year because of the same reason.
Yeah, and we got to relax. We got to take it easy. That's what I'm talking about.
That's not what I meant. And you know that. Yes, the beach was fun. We all had a great time. But my father is not going to be around forever. And I don't want to feel like I missed this opportunity to spend time with him. I don't know why we always have to go through this. I wish you could just think about what I need or what the kids need. And it wasn't just always about you.
Really?
Really.
So I'm selfish. I'm working 60 hours a week, okay? To pay for all these vacations, all this stuff that we do, so you can make all the decisions? Really? Is that how it's going to work? I'm just some big ATM. I'm going to throw money all over the place so you can make all the decisions. Yeah, go ahead and call me selfish. That makes a lot of sense. I'm selfish.
I cannot take this anymore. Like, taking care of the house and the kids, like, that's not a real job. You know, and I work part-time. I pull my share. If it's that important to you to have a break, you should take one. Go to the beach. Call your golf buddies. Do whatever you want. And I'll take the kids.
I want to take a family vacation. Family vacation. I want to see my kids. I want to spend time with my kids.
Well,
care about this family as much as you care about your parents. That's what you need to be doing. We're right here. Us.
That is so unfair. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, it is ridiculous.
You know what?
You're right.
You do whatever you want. I'm going to bed.
You do that. I'm going to watch a movie.
Please do not do that.
Good night. I'll see you tomorrow. Good night. Why does it always have to be this hard?
We study peacemaking because my guess is that everyone's kitchen or car ride home or living room has looked something like that at some point in time. How a very simple discussion about where to go on vacation turns into this nightmare that definitely ruins the rest of the night, definitely doesn't do anything to build up that relationship, and in fact has horrible negative effects. So that's why we are talking about resolving everyday conflict. Now, later in the series, we're going to come back to that couple, and we're going to see how they do it right. But today, what I want to introduce is, I want to introduce a new way of thinking. Last time we did an overview of conflict, I suggested that there's an anatomy to conflict. The fuel, the gasoline, the oxygen is in there for the science person who didn't like the analogy. And then what I want to do this time is get an overview of biblical peacemaking at kind of 10,000 feet, a full, kind of maybe a four-step process, after we look at some alternate approaches to peacemaking that are not biblical. And then during our next four times together, we'll deep dive into each one of those four steps and end up talking about negotiating and compromising towards the end of our series together. Okay? So let's go ahead and dive in, understanding different approaches to conflict. And again, as we've done throughout the series, we'll be utilizing the discuss with the people around you dynamic. So if you're sitting by yourself, go ahead and move towards somebody, and they will not bite. So first, understanding different approaches to conflict. Everyone's heard of the fight or flight response to conflict that comes out of science, that comes out of psychology. You know, this is definitely something that is, you know, in the church. I mean, when you have sin, you have all these different kinds of poor responses to conflict. The first category, the first side of the spectrum I want to suggest is these attack responses, or what I'll call the fight. There's kind of three subcategories under here. The first one is, it's all your fault. So this is just blame shifting. Everyone has blame shifted. You're being attacked, you feel attacked, and instead of doing anything about it, you're not running, but you're also not trying to resolve it. You just push it back and say, it's your fault. Someone says, you've done this, you've contributed this way, and what you do is say, this is your fault. And here's the thing, blame shifting often leads not just to saying this is your fault and not getting anything done, it also leads to gossip, because here's what you do. You don't want to resolve it initially. And so you go, can y'all see that? Oh, it's a little small. Can y'all really see that? Sorry, y'all. I mean, it's like a Rubik's Cube trying to get all these fonts right over there. Okay, so not just, then you go try your case in the court of public opinion. That's what you do. You've done it before. I've done it before. Can you believe that this happened? She did this and this. And all of a sudden, you're trying to gain momentum until you go in to do some confrontation. Then you've already got some people on your side. You've got some momentum built up. Well, Bob agrees with me, and Erica agrees with me, and I shared it this. And of course, you share a horribly biased version of the story, and everyone's like, yeah, you have every right to be upset. And that's what blame shifting causes. And there are some of us who are just wired for blame shifting. Maybe all of us to some degree, but some more than others. Even in things that aren't involved conflict, maybe that don't involve conflict, excuse me, maybe it's just something bad has happened. And your first question is, all right, whose fault is it? Meaning like out here, whose fault? Not like me. Whose fault is it, or what happened? Who did it? And then that's your default. And then you might slowly come to accept that maybe it was you, or that maybe you played a role in it. We'll talk about that progression in just a second. So blame shifting, the first kind of attack response. The second, assault. So assault physically, obviously, that's what we think of, I think, primarily when we think of assault. But the idea is using verbal or physical force or intimidation to make others give in. Three kinds here. First, intellectual force. I'm smarter than you, so I'm going to talk over your head to make sure that you know that you don't know what you're talking about, and you feel foolish for trying to contribute to this argument. That is intellectually attacking somebody. And it's a devastating way of assaulting somebody. It is a devastating way of assaulting somebody because it humiliates people. You shame people when you do that, when you attack them intellectually. Second, abusive language. I don't think I need to give a lot of examples for this one. Everyone can probably think of what abusive language sounds like. That could be profanity. That could just be personal insults. Again, this assault on this person. I'm not just blaming them for something and saying this is your fault. I'm actually assaulting them. And then third, relational punishment. Relational punishment. I'm going, you know, okay. Okay. I'm going to make the rest of this day miserable for you. I'm going to make the rest of this week miserable for you. You know what? In fact, I feel a headache coming on tonight after the kids go to sleep, so don't even try. It is relational punishment, social threats. Maybe even I'm going to go tell people this and that. All assault responses, all kinds of fight or attack responses. And then finally is passive aggression. Everyone understands how being passive aggressive works. Right? Everyone's had that person who maybe you get into an argument with your spouse about cleaning the house or something like that. Maybe you're driving home and I'm driving. I say, you know, baby, man, Crystal Beatty, she cleans the house really nice. Oh, stop sign. And what does it do? It's like a silent dagger. It's like a silent dagger. It's this something that you just kind of slip in there, even slide under the table. You're not being, we are being mean. You're being at least, at the very least, insensitive. But what you're doing is you're not yelling, you're not screaming, but that's why it's called passive, right? You're being passively aggressive. It can be snarky, it can be sarcasm, it can be cynical, it can be these tiny little words that you insert, like sometimes the word little itself, into a sentence. I don't want to do your little thing. Adds that little edge to it, doesn't it? Passive aggressiveness. That's the would be on the attack side of the spectrum. If the spectrum was like this half circle, yes.
I don't think we necessarily need to wait for the mic, please.
Yeah. I had two mic men.
Okay. I don't think we need to flesh out. We know what profanity is, but I think that possibly giving some examples of what abusive language looks like in other contexts would be actually very helpful for us to be able to recognize, is this happening to me now?
Okay, fair enough. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to table that until the first discussion, and then I'd like for that to come out in the discussion. Is that fair? Okay, thank you for pointing that out, though. It's very perceptive. Okay, so if one side is the fight or the attack, the other side of the unbiblical response to conflict resolution is escape responses or flight. The first is this, just deny the conflict. There is no real conflict, right? There is no real conflict here, nothing to see. This is just two people who just disagree with each other. This is just two different personality types. And here's what we do. We rationalize conflict as disagreement or social friction, personality differences to avoid confrontation. I remember one of my family members just blatantly sinned against another one of my family members. And they are both very stubborn. They're both very bullheaded. They're both believers, too, though. And but what happened is the way it was reconciled or resolved is one approached the other, the offender approached, and he put out his hand and said, "Hey, we're both strong-willed." That was it. That was supposed to be like making peace. Hey, you know what? We're just both strong-willed. What's he doing? He's saying, listen, we're just strong-willed people. We have different personalities. We have different interests at this point. Nothing. There's nothing wrong. There was actually a lot wrong. There need to be repentance. There need to be forgiveness. But it was pushed under the rug as just denying the conflict. Second, you deny your role. You deny your role. I might have contributed, but I am primarily the offended, so I'm waiting for them to step up first. It's not the time to focus on my sin. And this one is so tricky because it's so tricky if you're the person who maybe has sinned 2% and 98% is against you. Because you don't want to say, you know what, I need to take ownership of my 2%. But as the phrase comes up, and we'll see it later on, you're 100% responsible for your 2%. You're 100% responsible for your 2%. And brothers and sisters, if we serve a holy God, right now, the present, is always the right time to consider your own sin. The present is always the right time to consider your own sin, regardless of how badly you've been sinned against. Doesn't mean don't be concerned with that. But as we'll see when we look at Matthew 7, to be concerned with your own sin as well, no matter how much you contributed or how little. Second, moving on under the umbrella of the flight, ignore the conflict. Let's just go along to get along. It's not worth risking awkwardness and tension. I wrote this down correctly, so I just want to read it off. I'd prefer the unaddressed tension to any attempt at resolution, which would likely involve me and others feeling awkward. Maybe someone will cry, get their feelings hurt. It'd be terrible. That's just not worth it. I would rather just kind of think maybe something in the background is wrong than to actually address it. Because I don't like social friction. I don't want conflict. And all of a sudden, that gets elevated above making peace with somebody, and so you just kind of go along to get along. You ignore it. Run. This one is probably the most obvious. It's time. I'm done with this relationship. I am relationally bailing. Maybe this is in marriage. Maybe this is just in a friendship. Whatever relationship it's in, conflict, the way this person addresses it is they just run. They bolt. I'm not going to address it. I'm just going to leave, and maybe time will heal wounds and we can come back and pretend it didn't happen. And I've seen that in a close relationship that I have observed, where this one person, every time things get difficult, they just run away, and about a year later they come back and they try to start again. They just run. I'm done with this relationship. Okay, we met up. All right, let's try this again. Nothing ever gets addressed the way conflict is addressed, as it is running. And let me just briefly, before we discuss this question, the progression, I want to talk about the progression of denial and blame shifting as someone gradually accepts their role, gradually accepts their piece of the ownership of sin. Here's how it goes. I'm not going to put this up here. It's not up here. I'll just say it. The first is, there's not really a conflict. It's just agreement, nothing to address here, nothing to see. The second, the next step after that is, okay, you know what, there is a conflict, but it's your fault. I'll admit, this is more than just a personality disagreement, but it's really your fault. I mean, or at least your quirkiness is what caused it, or your personality is really the one at fault. The next step is, after you know what, you're right. Okay, the conflict was partially my fault. So now I'm taking partial ownership. It's partially my fault, but now we need to focus on the primary offender, your sin first and now. That's what we really need to be focused on. Maybe we can talk about me down the road, but we're talking about this person. We're talking about this person right now. In your mind, that's what you're saying. Next step is, it was my fault after all, but it's not a big deal, so stop making it one. That's the next step. Final progression before total acceptance is, it was my fault and serious, but I shouldn't have even been in that situation and wouldn't have if you or others hadn't created it. You know, it is my fault, but if you had done this, it never would have happened. It was my fault and now our house is burned down, but you know what, I told you to clean out the oven last week. And that wouldn't have, and you know what, if it was clean, it doesn't matter that I forgot that the food was in there when we left for the whole day. As opposed to, it was my fault and serious. I'm ready to confess and repent of my part of the sinfulness and ask for forgiveness. And I'm not going to follow that up with, and you have anything to say? Before we look at a model for peacemaking, as opposed to these two errant forms of conflict resolution, I want to discuss this, and I want what Rex said to come out in this discussion. Which responses that we just talked about, all of us naturally tend towards one or the other. None of us naturally tend towards biblical peacemaking. Can we all agree on that? None of our natural bent is towards biblical peacemaking. Which responses do you naturally tend to default to? As you reflect, why do you think you tend towards those particular unhealthy responses as opposed to the rest of them? So what I want to come out of this is understand, ask questions, seeking to understand yourself, which ones do you tend to, and then why do you think that is, and then we'll circle up and discuss that as a group. Yes, ma'am, do you have a question before we go to discussion? Yes, ma'am. We have a microphone?
I'd like to suggest that there could be a third response, in a shorthand way. Pardon? I'm sorry. I'd like to suggest that there might be a third way to address conflict, and I was going to say in a shorthand sort of way, called doormat.
Okay.
And it's always my fault. You're like a sad sack. I know about this. And I apologize. It's all my fault. I'm sorry. Mm. And it's sort of to brush it under the rug in a way, but at the same time, it can be very sincere.
Mm.
And then the other person over time just says, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And that would fall instead of addressing anything else.
And what between fight or flight, attack or flee, which one would that fall under? Flee, right? It would be a form of laying.
Sincere too.
Sure, yeah. It can be sincere, but everything that's sincere can get distorted everything that's sincere can go off the rails a little bit, and when it does, you go into one of these unhealthy ways to do that. 4 minutes, circle up with the people around you. We'll snap our fingers and make someone appear around Janet. And let's circle back up together. Discuss right here. All right, let's bring it back in. Heard some really good conversations going on. Really good transparency and vulnerability, which is impressive for a group this size. I really appreciate that. So a couple minutes. What did you find? Okay. Which responses did you tend to find your heart naturally going towards, and why do you think that you tend towards those particular unhealthy responses as opposed to others? Let's hear. Raylan. Oh wait. Oh, Elijah. Sorry. Oh, we'll go him first, and then you, since you're on the way all the way back there.
Remind me your name, brother.
Remind me your name.
Jason.
Jason. Thank you, Jason.
Naturally, I tend towards a progression, and it's blame shift to assault, normally abusive language, and then ignoring the conflict.
Mm.
And I mean, my best reason for doing this progression is just not how I was raised, but how I grew up and noticing how things were resolved in my household. I found that blame shifting works the best when you have 3 other siblings. And then if that doesn't work, the louder you can raise your voice, normally that's the one who wins the argument.
Mm.
And then who wants to have awkwardness in your household, so just ignore the conflict afterwards.
Wow. Man, you are spot on. I know exactly what that's like. Thank you. That's great. Raylan.
I feel like over the years I've recognized kind of a swinging on the pendulum, either attacking or maybe first denying, and if that goes on long enough, I'll eventually attack. I also have noticed it depends on who the conflict is with and how I respond. If it's with my children or if it's with a friend, or, you know, if it's with the children, I tend to be more quick to attack.
Mm.
Or if it's with someone, you know, that has a, I'm more intimidated by or whatever, I might move more inclined to retreat and pull back.
Okay. Okay. Good. Who else? Rex.
Something that I've, this has been helpful, it's caused me to kind of meditate on this, is an interesting, this isn't necessarily myself that I'm thinking about here, but an interesting mix where you get both, where you get a sort of, it's an attacking, but it's an attacking in a way that tells you, okay, you need to go ahead and sit down, you need to deny the conflict. Or this sort of kind of an abusive attack where you attack the person's character. You don't actually engage with anything. You either attack them or you attack the idea that there's conflict at all.
And which one do you find your heart going to? Maybe not.
I'm very much if there's conflict, I want to get it over with. Let's talk through it. So I'm a little bit more on the attacking side.
Okay.
So I'll probably tend more toward, this is what you did wrong. This is what you need to do. You need to fix it now.
Okay. Why do you think that is? If you just...
I think it's because I'm a fairly relational person.
Okay.
And so something that I particularly hate is the feeling of a relationship breaking or not being there or distance. And so I want to fix that. That's usually like my desire is I want to fix that problem.
Okay, understood. And so you feel yourself sometimes getting overly aggressive in reconciliation attempts. Mm-hmm. Understood. Okay, good. All right. Let me go ahead and move on. Thank you so much for that. Let me go ahead and move on. I want to make sure that we get to everything and we get to have our last two discussion questions. So we just looked at 2 very unhealthy sides of the spectrum, fight or flight. And we didn't touch under every subpoint. We heard a good example over here where you could kind of lay down as a doormat, take ownership of things, maybe sincerely but misguidedly, and whether it's fight or flight. But let's talk about a high-level overview, and this is a high-level overview of biblical peacemaking, reconciliation. And like any good Baptists, we have like a couple letters to help remember. Okay, if you didn't grow up Southern Baptist, you probably didn't get the joke. All right. So the first one The first step in biblical conflict resolution, biblical peacemaking, is glorify God. Now, that sounds like such a church answer. But it, insofar as you can internalize that, it radically changes how you approach peacemaking, like for real. So your primary goal is not communication. Your primary goal is not being right. Your primary goal, I mean, you don't want to be false, deal falsely with somebody, but it's not even truth. It is 1 Corinthians 10:31, trying to get at the truth, get an agreement on the truth. That's what I meant to say. 1 Corinthians 10:31, so whatever you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. So this is comes after a summary. We won't take time to read the entire context. But here's Paul saying, listen, whatever context of life, whatever you're doing, the glory of God should be the first thing that you're concerned about. The glory of God should be the driving passion for how you are going to move forward in the situation. And so that's the very first thing you stop and think about. Instead of, I have to fix somebody, or I have to fix this, when I'm deciding how am I going to move forward, glorify God doesn't just become some theological slogan that Reformed people like to repeat. It becomes a way that helps me move towards somebody in love. There are certain things that I might do or might not do if my primary aim is to communicate a message versus glorify God. Right? So glorify God. It's a first step. The first G. It's actually two G's. Look at that. But anyways, the first G here is glorify God from 1 Corinthians 10:31. And then we have, the subpoint. The first step encourages us how to clarify our highest values. How can I please and honor God in this situation above anything else? Certainly should not be the only thing that you're wanting to do, but that should be the first thing. Everything else should come through the lens of your desire to please and honor the Lord there. Second, get the log out of your own eye. We already touched on this. I'm talking about someone who doesn't want to take ownership of their sin before they go point someone else's out and make sure the spotlight stays on them. From Matthew 7, let me read it. We all know the passage. It's misquoted by every non-church person and a lot of church people in the world. Judge not that you be not judged. For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when there is a log in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. Now, this is specifically applying this Matthew 7 text to conflict. Because you could apply this, obviously, much more generally to maybe someone just walking in sin, and we are Galatians 6:1 to approach somebody and restore them gently. But not hypocritically, right? Does Matthew 7 condemn confrontation? Does it condemn pointing out sin? Does it condemn? Absolutely not. What it does is it precludes condemning people like your God and doing so hypocritically. And again, the first direction that you turn is not out, it's in. It's what did I contribute? And here's what I have found. Even after I have searched my heart and cannot find a way that I have sinned in a conflict, I at least can find something that I probably could have done better. And that posture, now that's not repenting. You don't repent because you could have done better but not sin. That doesn't make sense. But having that posture of always I'm thinking of me first, always my sin is first, always, my lack of wisdom, perhaps, is first. That posture, getting the log out of your own eye, is going to be the second step. It will put you in a state to resolve conflict well. It'll put you in a state that will, as you will see when you actually put this into practice, will really disarm people when you come to conflict resolution. When you start by saying, listen, I sinned in this way against you. And all of a sudden, they're like, oh, okay. Okay, now maybe I can say that I sinned too. I mean, it's you've heard the golden rule. The peacemaker literature calls that the golden response. If you start with your confessing, admitting your own sin, asking for forgiveness, oftentimes people will feel comfortable doing it themselves. You can actually have some peacemaking. Not necessarily, but as a matter of practical fact, that tends to happen. The second step here encourages us to examine our own attitudes and failures, understanding how you may have contributed to conflict, and giving a thorough and humble confession, if that's the case. Third, gently restore. This is Galatians 6:1 I just mentioned. Brothers, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. Keep watch on your own heart, lest you too be tempted when you come to restore this brother or sister. And so the idea here is respectfully and graciously help others to see how they have contributed to the conflict. Now notice, these aren't four G's in any order. You see how it's critical that this one comes after the first two? Right? Glorify God, get the log out of your own eye. Then, after that, after your first commitment is to glorify God in the situation, to please and honor the Lord, to maintain holiness, to exalt the name of Christ. I'm thinking of those things. Then second, in light of that, because I want to glorify God, I'm looking at myself. I'm looking at sin that I may have contributed to the conflict. I'm looking at lack of wisdom that I may have brought into the picture. Then, and only then, do I move to someone else and make an effort to gently restore things as far as conflict goes. Fourth, get together on lasting solutions. I'm trying to figure out when I want to read this quote. Get together on lasting solutions. I'll just say it like this. Focus on preserving and this is the Matthew 5, 23 and 24 is the if your brother has something against you while you're at the altar, go and be reconciled to your brother. It's not just the idea that you're going, but there's the idea going and attempting to restore is one thing, but reconciliation is something different altogether. Not always possible in a sinful, fallen world, but reconciliation being the aim throughout this. And the idea is focus on preserving and restoring the relationship to what it was, nothing more necessarily, through forgiveness that leads to a lasting resolution and clarification moving forward. So here's the idea. You're going to approach somebody, and you see people go off the rails here where it's like if there's reconciliation, what they're expecting is they're going to be best friends. It's so odd that people think that, and I mean, I guess it happens, but most of the time, you're going to have a friendship or a relationship, there's going to be a conflict, and right after that conflict is reconciled, you are trying to get back to where you were with that person, provided that the Lord pushes you forward so you have an even deeper relationship with that person after the conflict. That's great. But just because there's two people that have a conflict doesn't mean you have to be best friends afterwards. Conflict resolution doesn't mean changing social dynamics. That doesn't mean that I'm going to have a different personality and you're going to have a different personality. We're going to have a conflict, and when we reconcile it, we're going to meet at Arby's on Tuesday for a year. I mean, that's not what it means. We are going to restore. In insurance, it's called indemnification, right? It's giving someone back to what they had. Getting a relationship back to what it was. And if it goes over that, fantastic. But the idea of reconciliation is getting things back. And then understand what went wrong so you can actually have a lasting resolution so it doesn't just happen again. You see a lot of people who go to restoration and they're kind of like, okay, do you forgive me? I forgive you. Okay, great. And then they just kind of wait till it happens again. There's no understanding of like, okay, why did this happen? How does this, Drew, I don't know where Drew is, but he made a great point last time we were together about conflict helping you understand the other person better. Use that opportunity here when reconciliation to say, listen, what is it that sets you off? How can I understand you better? How can you understand me better? And moving forward, what steps can we take so that we don't just keep repeating this ad infinitum? How can we actually not just move on, but move forward, so to speak, in our relationship? That leads us to our second discussion question. And here's what I'd like us to discuss. Which one of these major steps have you found to be the most difficult in your experience of conflict, and why? Which one of these major steps have you found to be the most difficult in your experience of conflict? Remember, glorify God, get the log out of your own eye, gently restore, get together on lasting solutions. 4 minutes. It's a challenging one, I think. And then let's hear from the groups. All right, let's bring it back together. I want to try to get, I got about 8 minutes. We have about one more discussion question, so I want to get through. Let's bring it back together. If I could hear, let's hear from two people in terms of answering this question. Ben, yes. Can we get a microphone over here, please?
I've got
Oh, my man.
Yep. I had the secret hidden microphone.
Yeah.
So we had two people in our group both brought up the issue of maybe not something that they personally struggle with, but they brought up a really good question with number three. So you can be seeking to glorify God, be self-examining before you come to it. What if you're dealing with angry people who absolutely will accept no responsibility? So you get to number three and you try and graciously restore, and then that just stirs up the conflict again. Where do you go from there?
Unfortunately, you're going to hate my answer, but it just totally depends on what it really depends on so many variables. But notice I said you can't always get to reconciliation because that involves two parties. You are not responsible for reconciling a relationship. You are responsible for doing your part. And then the specifics after that could go 100 different ways in terms of if it doesn't work, if I'm going towards somebody and they just have this entrenched anger and this and that, that would be case by case. I know that probably is not a very helpful answer, but in reality, I could envision after that next step, I go to somebody, I approach them gently, they respond, they're angry for X, Y, Z reason. There's probably 10 different ways that you could go forward after that. I could bring in other people. I could bring in accountability. I could step back and we'll look at when it's okay for reconciliation just not to happen. Have I done everything possible? Sometimes once you've done everything, then that's on them. And you have an attitudinal forgiveness, even though you haven't had transactional forgiveness. And we'll talk about that later down in the series. It's a Father, forgive them for they know not what they do, but they haven't asked me for forgiveness. Or it's Stephen about to be stoned saying, forgive these people. They're not asking him for forgiveness. There's no reconciliation, but there's an attitudinal forgiveness that we'll get to. Let's hear from another person. Jonah. I'm trying to get people who haven't. Hey, Josh Gamble. Settle down over there.
What our group talked about is how much glorifying God and getting the speck or the log out of your eye, how those are so connected that without those, everything else will fall. Like you cannot get your own speck without glorifying God. Because as you said earlier, when you try to raise your voice, you get your point across, and whoever gets their point across wins the argument. But it's like almost like we said, it's like a domino effect. You cannot have one of those, glorifying God or getting the speck out, and the rest will fall down after. It'll just lead to like a sinful argument.
And have you found those the most difficult, those first two, would you say?
Yeah, that's what I found sometimes the most difficult is just, I'm right, and you're going to need to listen to me.
Understood, yeah, wow. Josh, real quick.
Something that was brought up in our group was the first one that you said, which was glorifying God, and how it's hard to want to glorify God when you yourself also want to be glorified at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
So I guess the major point was that it's hard to do both. I guess it's hard to glorify God and then at the same time also you want glory for yourself.
Yeah, they're definitely incompatible. God, let's make our names great. You know? I mean, I've never said that out loud, but I promise you I've acted like that before. God, you and I can do it together. That's just kind of good. Well, I want to move on because I want to talk about something that a lot of people have even asked me about. Look at that. Why is it down there on the stage? Anyways, overlooking an offense, the pre-reconciliation question. So when is it okay to overlook an offense? Proverbs 19:11 clearly says, good sense makes one slow to anger, and it is glory to overlook an offense. I understand it's very small. You can't see it back there. I apologize. I don't know what happened. I don't know why there's only half of a sentence now down here. This has gone wrong. We're just going to Holy Ghost this thing the rest of the way out. So let me talk to you about a couple of very practical steps in practical wisdom that you can ask. I hope you write these down. If you want me to send these out in the slides out later, I'll be more than happy to. But I want to take some time to talk about some practical steps, and then we're going to workshop this real quick with a list. Okay? Okay, so the first is pray for discernment. It's so interesting how this is just so skipped over for tools and acronyms and all of this kind of stuff, right? But the first is pray for discernment. If we're a kingdom of priests, if we have Jesus as our advocate, if we're indwelt by the Spirit, pray for discernment. Is this something that I can overlook? Is this something that I can overlook? After I have prayed for discernment, I'm going to ask three questions in practical wisdom. First question, will this offense create a wall between me and someone else or cause me to feel differently toward them in a negative way for more than a very short period of time? When I think of this person because of whatever happened, am I going to feel differently towards them? Am I going to harbor some kind of change in feeling in a negative way because of what has happened? When I hear their name, am I going to think about that time they did this? Is that who they're going to be, the person who did this back then? First question. Second question. Will this offense cause serious harm? If not to me, to God's reputation, to others, or to the offender themselves? Will this offense cause serious harm? So I'm looking, should I overlook this? Is this going to hurt this person? Is this going to hurt them personally? Is this going to wreck God's reputation? Is this going to make a disaster of the gospel? Is this going to end up being a public spectacle? Is this going to hurt me? Is this going to cause me serious personal injury? Maybe physical if you get to that stage of the attack mode. But is it going to hurt my heart? Is it going to pierce me? If you say if the answer to questions like that is yes, then you should not overlook that offense. That needs to be addressed. Okay. Third, is this offense a one-off occurrence or a destructive pattern? Is it a one-time thing? Now, to be clear, if it's a serious enough thing, it doesn't matter if it's a pattern or not. You do one thing and it's really, really serious, you're almost certainly going to be addressed on it. You should be addressed on it. But if it's not something that's serious and you can get through those first two questions, you're not going to feel animosity towards this person. You're not going to label them as the person who did this back in the past, and I can't believe it. And you can get to it's not going to cause any serious harm. Then we can look at, is it a one-off occurrence or is it something that you see over and over and over and over again, and it seems innocuous, right? It seems innocent, but because it's a pattern, you start wondering things like, I wonder what other areas of life this creeps into for this person. I mean, they're not hurting my feelings or anything, but this seems to be a pattern. I've seen this 5, 6, 7, 8 times. Then this should probably be addressed. If this is a one-off occurrence and it's not going, and your questions pass the first two, you should probably be good to go. You should probably be good to go in overlooking that offense if it's not a pattern. Finally, if you've gone through all this and you still have no idea, you really don't know. You do what God tells us to do. Consult wise counselors about how to move forward without identifying details. Now, don't go tell somebody who knows that you are. Don't use this as an excuse for gossip. Don't go talk to somebody who knows exactly what you're saying, but you're using like pseudonyms and this and that, and you are taking an opportunity to gossip about somebody. I'm not talking about sharing details about something to someone who is part of the solution, right? So the running definition of gossip that Stephen has given us is great, is if you're not part of the problem or the solution, keep your mouth shut, right? We don't just give information out for curiosity's sake. But the idea is, without identifying details, without going into excruciating detail, without going into names and all these specific things, if I've gone through all these things and I still don't know if it's something I should address, and let me just say, if you get to that point and you're still unsure about it, you probably need to address it. Let me just say, if it's still causing you enough, like, I still don't know, I feel like I may need to say, you probably should. Very quickly, those are the questions here, okay? Now notice all these are person relative too. It may be that one thing that you do to me doesn't create a wall between me and you, but if you do it to somebody else, it may in fact create a wall because of how they are. We have a diversity of people. I want to discuss this. We're right at time. I don't want to lose this though. I want to discuss this real quick. Here are 10 things, and I want you to have a discussion. We'll go about 4 minutes. We'll go 4 minutes over. That's okay. And here briefly about whether to overlook or not to overlook. If you can't see these, I apologize, but perhaps you can move up just for the discussion. And I want to hear the answers from the groups. We won't have time to get to all of them, obviously, but we'll shotgun them off 1 through 10. Using some of the principles that we just looked at, get together and talk about, do I overlook this offense relative to these principles or not? 4 minutes. All right, let's bring it back together. I apologize. Wish we could have had a little bit more time for that one, but I want to briefly hear from the groups, and And then we really need to go ahead and close. But I heard probably the best discussion about this. A lot of people laughing, but also considering carefully. Okay, let's just go through briefly. Let's shotgun through these and just very briefly. We can do this as a group. We don't need a microphone here. So a neighbor blows his grass clippings into your yard. Do you overlook or do you not overlook? Overlook, okay. So maybe someone is just so particular about their grass, though. It's a prize-winning lawn. They always win the award every year. And that would cause them animosity. That would be that care. Then all of a sudden, that person over there is that careless person who just doesn't care about other people's stuff. That person probably should go address them. Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah. Huh? Sure. Well, yeah, that's the first part, right? So I'm going to look inside thinking, why does this concern me so much that there's grass? All right, number two, a passenger in your car keeps giving you unsolicited driving advice. Is it? Huh? What? Well, what is it? Is it good advice? Okay. Okay. Hit that car. So that sounds like there's a diversity of opinion on that one, which is fine. That's the whole point, though. That's why you ask these questions. It's not going to be the same answer for everybody. Not going to be the same answer for everyone. All right, you see a church member take money out of the offering box.
Overlook that.
No, just to repeat for the camera and all of our visitors. If you see someone taking money out of the offering box, please do not overlook that. That would cause...
It's the deacons that are counting.
Yes. But a church member that's not a deacon, I guess. Good. All right, an extroverted coworker talks continuously and it's incredibly annoying and distracting.
I love you too.
Okay, does someone have a... Do you raise your hand back there?
I wouldn't overlook it.
Okay.
All,
but here, let's hear why, though. But,
so first of all, they could be causing you to have decreased productivity, so it's actually a detriment to the company.
Okay, so they could be causing you to have decreased productivity, so it would be a detriment to the company, repeating for the camera. And
second of all, it will cause you to start thinking differently about that.
Okay, fair enough. For some people, sure. For some people, it may not. For you mentioned you had a great example last week about how when you plan your time to read your book and someone wants to come talk, you're like, Okay, that's a great example. Okay, we got to move forward. So a group of teens bullies a child at school. Don't overlook. That's what everyone said, right? Okay, correct. Yes. Your spouse audibly sighs trying to get by you in the hallway. Okay. What is it? Let's hear. Here, let's do this. Who says overlook? Who says address that one? Okay. You can't say it depends. I know it depends. But I want you to look at the hands, and I want you to see it does depend. That's the whole point of these questions in practical wisdom. If these were just yawners, we wouldn't be doing this exercise. Okay, a stranger leaves their grocery cart in front of your car. Overlook. Okay, to not overlook. Okay, good. Put your hand down. Okay. You find pornography on your friend's laptop while trying to check Facebook at their house. Overlook. Address. Okay, good. Good. And why is that one, particularly? Okay, so that seriously harms, that could wreck your whole life. There's people, you could wreck your whole family, absolutely. Okay, number nine, someone is intentionally given credit for your accomplishment or idea at work or school. Okay, overlook. That would definitely not be overlooking. All right, overlook, all right, address. Are there about 50-50? They all depend. They all depend. I'm just saying, so we had about 50-50 there. That just shows you the diversity of the way people respond to things, and it's good to see. And then finally, someone is late to your group event due to poor planning for the fourth time in a row. It's not that they're always late because, they're not always late because, you know, they work till 7 o'clock and your group starts at 6:45. They are late because they're just not good at planning. So,
count as a group event?
Sure. Yes. Absolutely. It sure does. So, do you overlook this? Overlook. All right, the people who are continually late want to overlook. All right, to not overlook. Okay, yeah, to not overlook. And why is it valuable Why is it valuable to be to be on time, and why would you want to confront somebody who, due to poor planning, that's the key, not just because there's a traffic accident. Why would you want to address someone on that?
It shows a lack of caring.
Okay. Okay, the value of what's going on there, the care, we'll just show up when we can, we'll enjoy it, and then we'll leave. Very kind of a consumeristic idea, sure. All right, guys, great discussion. Apologize for going over. If we can get someone's permission to start a little bit later on the next 5 minutes late, moving in the next half. Can we do that or no? Good? Okay, we'll start 5 minutes late. Let me pray for us. I hope this has been encouraging. I heard great discussion. Hope to give you some practical wisdom as we move forward. Looking forward to diving in next time to the glorifying God piece, the practical part of that. Let's pray, please. Father, we are thankful for the opportunity to discuss these things and not just try, but also to attempt to train our minds to keep our minds on what is good and pure and keep our minds on things above, that we would glorify you, that we would look to our own sin first, that we would restore people gently, and that we would get together on lasting solutions moving forward in wisdom and love. We pray that where there is reconciliation that needs to be had, and even relationships across this room, that you would work powerfully, that you would help instill these biblical principles deep into our heart, not just something that we hear in Sunday school and then walk out and forget. Be with us in the second hour in this break, we ask and pray. Amen.